Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Rickrout.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we'll be talking about a new release in theaters. It's been getting a lot of attention, and I think it's going to be a great conversation. We'll be talking about the award winner from Cannes, Coralie Farjaw's The Substance, a movie that I think is meant to be divisive and over the top. So I think we'll have a good little chat about it today.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about this movie because it's already been fun for me to talk about with people who have really loved it and people who have really hated it. I understand why some women really connect with it and feel, you know, this very cathartic, understood feeling while watching it, and why others may hate it. But I think as a piece of satire, it's fascinating. And it conjured up feelings in me that I have never had watching films before. So that will be fun to talk about.
Yeah, so let's just dive right in. We will be getting into spoilers at some point. I think it's hard not to, or to talk about some of its scenes or moments that are really shocking. So if you haven't seen it yet, it is in theaters. I would recommend seeing it before listening. But The Substance, it's about a fading celebrity who decides to use a black market drug, a cell replicating substance that temporarily creates a younger, better version of herself. Again, it's directed by Coralie Farjaw. It stars Demi Moore as Elizabeth Sparkle, Margaret Qualley, and Dennis Quaid. It won Best Screenplay at Cannes, and as we mentioned last week, the Midnight Madness People's Choice Award at TIFF. What are your general reactions? Which side of that spectrum that you mentioned did you land on?
So what's hard about this movie is that when I saw the trailer and heard some of the initial reactions, I fully expected to really dislike this movie. I think in a way that I disliked Promising Young Woman, because there were very similar bright colors. There were a lot of close-ups on the characters. And knowing that it was this feminist odyssey, in quotes, I will say, I just thought, I have such doubts, as Meryl Streep would say. But then when I actually watched it, there were certain things that did, I think, go a little far. We'll get there. But I think it is such an interesting, satirical fairy tale about the self-hatred that women in particular experience and how violent that can be. And it's also, I think, a pretty searing indictment on the pharmaceutical industry and how that industry in particular really weaponizes youth and beauty to make women feel worse about themselves, and how that all comes from misogyny and the patriarchy. I think that is really interesting. I think that this film is obvious. It is painfully obvious. There are no subtleties in this film, but I think that is all by design. And a huge part of why I think it's so interesting to talk about is because it hammers home its point many times. And that's something that bothers me frequently. You know, I've complained about that, I think, in particular with Yorgos Lanthimos and with Darren Aronofsky and with Iñárritu, where you get the point in the first 5 minutes and you think, okay, why am I sitting here for another 2 hours? But this feels a little bit different. I think I could understand why people might have that reaction to this. But for me, that point and how repetitive it is was so tied up in the satire, and specifically in what we experience through the beauty industry, that repetition constantly being fed that through social media, having that be something that's all around you at all times, because this movie is really a mirror. And that, I think, even with the point hammered home so many times, as it unfolds, I think you start to think new things about it and start to reflect a bit on yourself and how you're reacting to the images and experiences that you are seeing on screen. So I actually lean more positive on this movie. The more I'm thinking about it, the more people I've talked to about it. I talked to my mom about it. We had a really good conversation about it. So I am on that more positive end of the spectrum with this, which really shocked me after I watched it.
I left the movie really loving parts and really hating parts. And that includes elements or design choices, effects, things that, yeah, in this medium is super maximalist, way over the top. But I think it being a horror movie, as I think about it more and more, I think it is smart for doing what it did. And even though it is over the top, I think that plays into, again, the story and what she's saying about women, about Hollywood, and the dangers in that, self-love, self-hate. There's so much to break down. And I think that's what I liked about it, is that maybe it was hammered a bit there, but those themes started to morph in my head and how I processed them as we were seeing things in a different way, like between Elizabeth and Sue, or Sue getting ready for the New Year's Eve event. You know, there were things that I really appreciated about the way she was capturing it, or just how the audience was reacting to it. The third act, just there was so much laughter and applause, and the mood of the theater just lifted. So it was a different kind of experience ending it, especially if you've seen the movie, how she did, which is just so bizarre. And I've mentioned her, so this is her second movie. I've mentioned her previous one, Revenge. And honestly, I was so happy that I saw it before, because I knew what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in that movie that mirrors the stage scene in the end of this movie. And she just takes it even further than she did. But it's comical because of just how that stage looks at the very end and what a nightmare that becomes. Mm-hmm. But I think along the way, I did enjoy it. I was really entertained, even if it challenged me. And I think I appreciate those experiences more than just loving or hating something. It's thinking along the way and interacting with other viewers from that.
This film, as it starts, it exists in a very particular world. It's very heightened. It does not seem real. So I think people who are looking for logic necessarily in their films, or who have those kinds of questions of specific rules, this film might be a little bit harder. And I think it's because you need to just fully embrace what she's going for. It feels like a very heightened, ultra synthetic version of LA, where sometimes she seems to be the only person in that city. And I found that to be very cool. I think that the city is a manifestation of how she feels. It is at times a relic of the 80s with this workout class that Elizabeth has been running for a really long time for her entire career. It reminded me of the Jane Fonda workout videos, but it's also, it feels like it's set in present day. So those sorts of feelings that you have in her apartment, how it's decorated, which looks very 80s into 90s, those things that they just throw you off a little bit. And that's so important, I think, by design. And the way that the camera is usually low angle, close up or extreme close up on any given character at a particular time. It's focused on someone's mouth and how they're eating, or the way that a character's sunglasses look as they're walking through the city. Like, that to me is so unique, and just it further enhances what Farjah is trying to do in creating this feeling of loneliness and isolation. And I think also of just having your life under a microscope. And so much of what this film does that I really liked was that it really doubles down on the idea that a lot of us have, which is that we're constantly thinking of how others see us, and that that is our value and that is who we are. It's not how you see yourself. It's your vision of yourself and your idea of who you are after being in the spotlight or being subjected to the absurd beauty standards. You suddenly feel that your value is wrapped up in how others see you. And the idea that, oh, you know, all people look at when they see me is this horrible feature that I think I have, when in reality, that might not be what people see. But in Elizabeth's world, aging is death. Like, it is something that ends her career, and she no longer has any value. And a lot of women, as they age, talk about this. There have been so many articles written about it, about how when you get to middle age or as you get older, you become invisible. It's like when you're not young anymore, when you can't have kids anymore, people just look through you. And I think that is what Elizabeth starts to experience as she loses her job because she turns 50, you know, as she starts to realize the threat of being replaced by a younger, newer model.
And I like how the camera mirrors either these insecurities or as the movie progresses and Elizabeth or Sue, they evolve together, it becomes more chaotic. And I appreciated that we were seeing things on screen in a different way as time went on. And as their minds changed or they started to dislike one another or mistreat one another. And so I think the style is really important. I love how we start the movie. We have this image of this egg that they inject with the substance and the yolk splits. So we kind of have an idea of what's to come. But my favorite was the shot of her star being made, her Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
Mm-hmm.
And really the lifetime of that and what that means. And by the end, when it's cracked and no one really knows who she is anymore, and the guy drops his ketchup or fries or whatever on it, and this metaphor of ketchup as blood, which I was like, okay, here we go. But that idea and that encapsulation of her life, and that we were going to see that unfold. What happens after this when she's still around and very much living, what she thinks of herself and how she's treated in Hollywood, the ageism and sexism there, and what she does to try to make herself stay relevant, because the men in that industry do not value that at all. And mm-hmm. I think that being played by Dennis Quaid in such a way that he's immediately deplorable. You hate him. You see him eating this bowl of shrimp. That is like the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. I love food in movies, and this is not one of those movies that makes food look appetizing.
No.
But there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
Even the latte later in the movie, I'm like, oh my God, this is hurting me right now. But I think this introduction to these characters lets you know who they are immediately. And I think that's for better or worse, but I think better in the case of Elizabeth and in her feeling lost in this industry that she loves so much.
Yeah, again, with the lack of subtlety being part of the point, Demi Moore's character, her name is Elizabeth Sparkle. That is just perfect for this movie. Dennis Quaid's character being named Harvey. Who do we think of when we hear the name Harvey? We know what she's doing here with this horrible, disgusting studio exec who looks like a pig but wants women to be perfect and abuses and uses based on, you know, his power. It's interesting what she does, I think, with the men in the movie, too. I really enjoyed that, how they were all, like, any of the men that Elizabeth or later Sue, who we will talk about, all of the men that they interact with are comically average, which is great. Her neighbor across the hall just having so much confidence that he can get with her, but being completely basic. You have these ugly men who work with Elizabeth, who expect her to be beautiful and perfect and young, and yet they're all overweight. Their skin is all blotchy, and the men in this movie don't have to be anything more than just there. And I think it's a little bit less successful when we have the other person that she meets who has also used the substance. That I didn't love as much because I think it kind of makes it a little too obvious again that it almost doesn't trust its audience. But I like the way that she chooses to portray these men. That was what made me laugh, because that just feels so true.
Every single man in this movie is unlikable. And it's funny how they're unlikable in different ways. So each is almost like a different characteristic or caricature mm-hmm. of awful men. Like every scene, whether it's the guy from across the hall, whether it's Harvey, whether it's the guy from her high school class that recognizes her and he thinks she would just be down to get dinner with him. Every scene just made me so uncomfortable. And it's funny that the only guy, quote unquote, that is good is the customer service rep who she calls constantly and gives them advice. But we never see him. He's only this like voice to her, guiding her through this experience.
Well, the customer service thing I think is really interesting because he doesn't recognize her by name or as a person. He only recognizes her as a number, which I thought was a great detail. She'll say, "This is Elizabeth." And there's just a long pause and she'll say 503. It reminds me of when you're trapped on a call like with an airline or something. And you just have to say over and over, speak to a customer service representative, because it's just that AI, the automated messaging of say yes if this, no if this, press one if this. That's what it reminded me of. And again, I think it just shows like how she gets so hooked on this and doesn't understand like what she's gotten herself into. And I think in terms of the actual substance, right, like the fact that she gets into a car accident when they're tearing her face away from a billboard, again, the obviousness, I admire it. I think it's very funny. And it feels in that part like the beginning of a fairy tale. That's what it reminded me of. You have this beautiful woman in Demi Moore who wants to try something new, and she gets sucked into this new world by people who are preying on her for her insecurities and her vulnerability. And then from that, getting access to the substance and hearing that, you know, it'll change your life and inquiring about it, she has to go to this weird warehouse where the door doesn't even open all the way and get her into her lockbox and everything with her little box with the drugs and the instructions. I think that's the moment where Farja first asks you, would you do it? Like, if you were in her situation and you got this opportunity to unlock a younger, more beautiful, like hotter version of yourself, would you do it? And what lengths would you go to do it? Because from the very beginning, it's so sketchy. She just is given limited information. She doesn't meet with a doctor. It's not anything that we could ever imagine. And yet, there are traces of this drug. The fact that it's an injection, I think, is really important, because right now we're living in this world where Ozempic and Mounjaro and all of these injectable weight loss drugs, people who don't need them for weight loss or who don't need them for diabetes are like, a lot of celebrities are just taking them so they can drop weight really quickly. You know, I'm not going to like blame them for doing that. That's the industry selling that to these women. And again, of the pharmaceutical industry preying on people's worst ideas of themselves to try to get them to buy something, to spend thousands of dollars on an injection. And little research had been done. And then you think too, I think about when she takes the substance, when she activates it, and we see her spine split open to birth this younger version of herself, Sue, played by Margaret Qualley, you, I think, can't help but think about just how inherently violent a lot of beauty treatments are. This is, again, an extreme of that. You know, we're not, if you get Botox, your back isn't splitting open, but you're getting needles stuck in your face. You're getting botulism put in your forehead to freeze your face so you don't have lines anymore, so you look younger. Or you're getting filler in random places in your face that you don't know how that's going to look when you get older. Or you're taping your mouth shut at night to fall asleep. Guilty. Like, all of these things, they're not comfortable, but we do them anyway, because, again, it's like if you buy into this system and these rules of, if you want to look younger, if you want to like look your best, these are the things you need to do. And so I like that she has taken that idea and really made it, I think, the most extreme violent thing, because I think even as crazy as it seems, we still have some sort of empathy for her and some sort of understanding of, oh yeah, I could totally see women doing this.
We live in a world where people both say, you know, don't listen to what anyone thinks about you.
Mm-hmm.
You do you. But at the same time, we have all of these new products like Ozempic or new beauty treatments, going to Korea and having full facial spa experience to get really smooth and plump skin. Like, it's a disconnected way of thinking, but that is very much the reality of things. So I think that was the joy and sadness in watching Elizabeth go through this, because it's like, yeah, you would be interested to try this, but how far will you go? Mm-hmm. And putting yourself in those shoes to think about that, I think, is what makes this experience special and why making it over the top, again, I think is okay. Because, yeah, these specific scenarios aren't happening to you, but in a way they can or are. So seeing them in the bathroom and really stripped down and the camera exposing all of that. And then when we do get Sue and seeing how things differ, and it's a bit of an eye roll moment of like, yes, we get it. And then, you know, later when she's dancing, it's just these close ups of her legs or her butt or her boobs. And it's like, yes, we get it. But the other part to that was, you know, how flashy and fun they make that look, and that the ratings are through the roof. And here she goes on this career path where she is like instantly skyrocketed to success, and what that means too in an industry where being the most popular, the highest paid, is the number one goal, the best outcome for you. And that's inherently harmful to yourself and to your mind. And the framework of the substance is it gives you this set of instructions and very few. And it's like, can you follow them? And obviously, you know, that's not going to happen. But it's like, when this goes wrong, what happens? And so those worlds, those ideas colliding together, I think, is what makes it so seemingly inventive. Or, you know, seeing this as just a fresh perspective on ideas that could be thin, but we're seeing it done in a totally different way.
So I think from this point on, let's get into spoilers, because so many of the references I want to make come, I think, a lot later in the movie, because it's all really intertwined. So this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't seen The Substance and you don't want it spoiled, pause and come back after you see it, because now we'll be spoiling. But I think there are a couple of things I was thinking about with the nudity and also with how Farja shoots Sue. And those close-ups, like you were saying, like on her butt or on her legs, and her butt is just, it's perfect in an annoying way when you're watching this movie, just have to say. And she's shiny and plasticky. It would be an interesting pair with Barbie, but the way that she shoots her, it reminded me a lot of like an infomercial. She would almost be like on a spinning pedestal or something, or how she's framed like a product as opposed to a person. And I really liked that, because I think on the surface you could think, oh yeah, okay, the camera is objectifying her. This is the quote unquote male gaze. You know, why are we seeing her through this lens? But really it's showing, I think, too, of how women in the entertainment industry really exist as commodities. This is something that is a transactional relationship for Sue, and that's also how the studio views her. And it's also, again, a mirror to ourselves. How are we feeling watching her? Are we taking part in this same sort of objectifying experience? Like, are we enjoying that? Because as the movie started to go on, I clocked in myself that I was enjoying the time with Sue more than the time with Elizabeth. And that made me feel horribly, because I thought, oh my God, she caught me. Like, we should not be feeling this way, but we do, because it is the flashier, glittery experience. It's that part of LA that we're enjoying. And I think going to the nudity for a second. So again, like thinking about the mirrors in the movie, so much of that is how these characters see themselves. Often with the nudity, they're looking in the mirror. And that I think is something that just makes it more vulnerable for the character and also just makes us consider how they're feeling more. But I also thought of, because she has so many references to other movies. I mean, you could name 20 to 25 that she's taking little bits from here and there or referencing. And I thought of The Shining, because part of the rule, obviously, of the substance is it's 7 days on, 7 days off. You can't go beyond that. There are no exceptions. And what we start to see is that when Sue does go beyond that, Elizabeth starts to physically deteriorate. The finger, when that changes to look like a witch's finger, I was thrilled. It was sad, obviously. I felt very sad for the character, but that, from just being a horror fan, I was really excited because I thought, oh, that's what's happening here, right? As Sue wants to be alive in her young body more and more, that is taking a toll on Elizabeth. There has to be a balance. And honestly, like the rules and the you are one doesn't totally make sense to me. I still feel like they feel very much like two separate characters. They don't really feel like one to me. And I think that's also probably part of the point. But that was something that was keeping me a bit from, I think, fully locking into that aspect of it. But then as Elizabeth deteriorates, I thought of that scene in The Shining, which, watching that movie too young, always terrified me, of when Jack sees that young naked woman in the shower. And as he gets closer, he realizes that she's dead and deteriorating. It's this great moment of horror and comedy a little bit because of what that character is experiencing. But I thought, oh, that's totally the reference that she's going for here.
Even very early, when we're with Harvey and we're in the office, it was that fisheye close-up as he's in the bathroom at the urinal. And I'm like, oh my God, this is Bardo. Get me out of here.
Oh, you know I hate a fisheye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. No. Lanthimos is also a great comparison there with a lot of that. Thankfully, the rest of the movie wasn't like this. But I think it's an important point that she used this in the office. And we're in that bathroom, which I immediately thought of The Shining. You have those red doors and that tiling. And then we're in the office, that really long hallway, lots of red and orange. And that reminded me also at one point, there's like a carpet that looks similar to the Overlook. And I'm like, wow, we're here already going straight in. And then when she activates, or at some point during that experience, it reminded me of 2001, like going through the black hole flying sequence. And I'm like, oh my God, she loves her classics, her Kubricks, really. But I think that was interesting too, because when I think of body horror, I don't think of Kubrick. I think of John Carpenter or David Cronenberg. And this movie is much more like those than Kubrick. But I think the psychological horror, or getting into the mind of those characters and relating them to Elizabeth and Sue, is also a really smart choice.
I also want to talk a little bit about how Sue's abuse of the substance takes its physical toll on Elizabeth, how she gets back at Sue by overeating. This also just made me feel so sad when I was watching it, and just again felt like something that I also haven't seen depicted in movies very frequently. And it's just that idea of specifically around disordered eating, but also the feeling you have if you wake up the next morning after eating a lot, and that guilt and shame that you can have from that. I feel like that's explored in the movie really well. But the scene with the disgusting food, like you were mentioning, where she has that weird cookbook that has those recipes that feel like they're from the 60s or 70s, like those parties where they have the like weird jello molds and those salads that make no sense together. And Demi Moore in that moment is leaning into that over the top witch type of performance. that I think is, again, leaning into those sorts of fairy tale tropes that we get of, okay, now there's this young, beautiful version. Suddenly, the, you know, older queen, her prime has passed, and now she has become a witch to defeat the young version or to, you know, wreak havoc on the young, beautiful version's life. Very similar to Snow White in that way. So I was thinking a lot about that. But the way that food is used there, I mean, it is just, they make it really gross. And also, I think it's a very painful moment for that character because suddenly she can't leave the house anymore. She doesn't want to go outside. She feels like she can't because she's getting uglier. And then that means that Sue is, you know, feeling like, well, I need to spend more time outside because she's wasting her time sitting in front of the TV eating. And it's getting into those really like thorny ideas around the type of attention that you can get or when you feel like you can step outside and are worthy of attention. The most real scene to me in the movie that made me feel so horrible and also understood is when she's getting ready to go on that date and she just can't go. She just has looked at herself in the mirror too many times. She's redone her makeup too many times. She puts on a scarf that really doesn't work. And then we just see her sitting on that bed and she doesn't go anywhere. This was the moment where friends who had seen it, we all just said, oh, that's so real. We've all experienced that in some way, shape, or form of working yourself up so much through your own idea of yourself and how you're perceived and just feeling so negative and so down that you decide to not leave your house. Sorry, TMI, but I think anyone watching the movie will feel that in some way, shape, or form.
No, I totally did too. It's all of that body dysmorphia and thinking you're never pretty enough, no matter what you put on. And, you know, up to this point in the movie, we've laughed at the guy from high school who she's now going on dinner with. But I think it's refreshing because it's like she's kind of accepted herself because of Sue and what she's done to her body. And that's made her appreciate herself more for where she's at. And you're like, wait, this is really sweet. You know, she could have this other life with this guy and be happy and normal, quote unquote, average in a way, but find happiness in that. And you're really rooting for her because, yeah, I've been in situations like that too. It's like, I don't want to go out. I don't want to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And her not in the end is just so upsetting. And there are a lot of scenes in this movie where you're just, you feel really sorry for her because it's real what she's feeling. That's not satire. Right. And just the weight she holds over herself, no matter what situation she's in, it just gets more depressing to watch as the movie goes on. And in those final moments when you see her and her mouth is just ajar and she can't move her face, it's so sad. Yeah. It's, yeah. You know, what we do to ourselves to be our best version when that's not really what happens in the end.
Yeah, because it's like, what is the best version? What does that even mean? And I think this movie tries to get to that a little bit. So getting into the ending, I think this film is too long. And I, you know, I love a long movie. Yeah. But by the time we get to the final 45 minutes, you do start to feel it. And it feels, I think, really humiliating for Elizabeth, which is why I did start to have trouble with it, because I do think it just takes it to such extremes where I had a hard time having as much fun with that because I just felt so sad of, okay, this woman, she cannot stop using this. And that whole thing too of the idea of like, okay, well, you have to terminate one and you're stuck with what you have. That's a really good idea, I think, in theory. But then this Lynchian ending meets Carrie with all of the blood on stage. We had gone so far so many times in this movie that I did just feel like I needed a little bit of a break. And it just took it to a level where I just thought, okay, this is a little bit too much. And I was just, again, really sad when this monstrous version of this character decides to try to curl the one piece of her hair.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, that just, like, I laughed and it broke me. I thought, okay, I'm done. I need to leave. We've done so much here. And I found so much of this cathartic that now I need a minute. But I wanted to ask you, because I had a very specific question for you about the ending, which is around the teeth. Anytime we have teeth or dental work in film, I have to ask you about not just accuracy, but what you thought about the design and how seeing Sue's teeth fall out, how that felt for you as a dentist.
Don't worry, I had a whole section on teeth because I think they're very important to this movie, which is great. I love that.
We love it.
I am really curious if they talk to a dentist, because a lot of my questions or my thoughts at first was that they didn't, and that really annoyed me. But then I thought about it again and I was like, wait, maybe they did. And that's the point. So I'm hoping for the latter and staying positive. But yeah, the teeth are important. So we have Elizabeth Sparkle. She definitely has veneers. Her teeth are perfectly white. They're bright. And even after the first transformation into Sue and she goes over on her time and we get the finger, we also have the cracked teeth down the middle. And so to me, veneers don't crack like that. They're either going to fall off. They're not going to have that appearance, which is natural teeth. So that was my one little thing. I'm like, okay, I get it that they're yellow and they're broken, but it's not how it works. And then that time with Sue at the New Year's Eve special, and she's pulling out her teeth. And I was like, oh my God, please don't do this. But they had two roots and your incisors in the front. So she pulled out three incisors. Those teeth do not have two roots. They have one root. So I was, again, my first thought was, what is this? That's not true. That's not teeth. But thinking about it as Sue is this evolution of Elizabeth, this otherly being, maybe that was really smart in that these teeth have now changed. Every part of her body is different. And so even that little detail, I actually thought was really ingenious. So I think, yeah, the teeth are really important. That bleeds into, you know, putting the earrings on the end, just like when she's trying to curl the hair, but the earrings, everybody died in my theater in that moment. And it was, I don't know if I needed this like third act part two of Monstro Eliza Sue and what happened on stage.
Eliza Sue.
It's so stupid. But we also should have seen that coming with all the titles happening throughout the movie. Because I was like, yeah, Sue is falling apart. And what would happen with her on stage? And I think having to take it that extra mile with, wait, let me activate myself again. Because I couldn't terminate Sue before, I think maybe that's a little bit smarter than having this creature on stage. But again, I think that was just more of the point and pushing it further. And honestly, I think a little bit of the limitations of the genre of having these ideas that you just have to develop until they're so monstrous, so to speak, that if you didn't take it there, it might actually look weaker. So it's just sillier and sillier and sillier and more and more and more blood. Like, it's just
so much blood.
It is the bloodiest movie I think I've ever seen.
It's let me take what happens at the end of Carrie and multiply it by 100. I love that detail about the roots, though, with the incisors, because remember, we have the reference to John Frankenheimer's seconds with the eyes. That's really cool. And like you were mentioning with the egg at the beginning with the two yolks, I would land on it probably being purposeful to have that little detail that only dentists would catch. I had no idea. Literally, I just thought the teeth looked fun. The last thing I want to say about the movie, I think, before we get into Oscar conversation, is just that this movie did make me think of the Real Housewives franchise. And just as women age, how much Botox and filler and work they're getting done to appear younger, and what that also looks like if they have young daughters. I think I was thinking of Ramona and Avery Singer from The Real Housewives of New York. I was thinking of Luann De Lesseps and her daughter, Victoria. These women who have daughters who are obviously much younger than them, but they are starting to look more and more alike as their daughters naturally age and as they get more work done. And it made me think of that idea of mothers and daughters as, you know, a version of a doppelganger in a way, especially when they look alike. And I think other filmmakers have explored this with a lot of subtlety. If you think of Joanna Hogg with The Eternal Daughter, for example. But this one is a much more, I think, aggressive version of that and thinking of that, of not Sue being Elizabeth's daughter, but she does birth her in a way, right? So we think of her, it makes us start to think, I think, of daughters as an extension of their mothers. And this idea of being one, but not being one. And what happens when a mother might not have a positive relationship with aging, and how having a daughter could affect that for her. That was something that the film unlocked for me, that I started thinking more and more about, of, you know, mothers and daughters as doppelgangers.
Mm-hmm. Or of, in a way, sucking the life out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a really gross way, they do that here, obviously. But you know, like when she's just stabbing her back and you have that oozing lesion from that, from her just mm-hmm. taking all of that fluid out of her body.
Yeah. And
again, it's pushed to an extreme, but it's real. It's so true. Mm-hmm. There were two other stylistic things that I really loved. One, you mentioned Barbie already, which as Monstro, Eliza Sue is going up on stage and she has that photo of Elizabeth on her face, which is insane. They're playing also Sprach Zarathustra from 2001.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how Barbie starts. And I think that was a choice by Greta Gerwig, that you can't not think about that movie when you hear this song now. So I think in that way, this was also an interesting connection between those two movies too, of those characters, but also as this presentation of the body and what she has now become. Earlier, I talked about the camera in the office, and one parallel, there are a lot of mirrors in this movie too, but the parallel at the very end. So we see Sue walking down the hallway one final time, but she only has two posters on the wall. She has her show and she has the New Year's Eve show. And in the beginning of the movie, we saw the same shot with Elizabeth walking down, and the hallway is filled with photos with her successes throughout her career. And so it makes you question, like, what's better, a long life that you've done a lot, or this short life where she's at the peak, she's at the very top, but her resume doesn't show that beyond these two events. So it's kind of an interesting way to look at their lives too, because of how Sue treats Elizabeth in that short amount of time.
One of the other references that I thought was really cool was the composer, Rafferty. The score is great. It reminded me of the Challenger score. Very synth heavy, 80s inspired. But this composer uses references from Bernard Herrmann's Vertigo score. And if we think of Vertigo, my favorite Hitchcock movie, so much of that is about what men can do to women and what a man's obsession with a woman, how that can spiral. And of course, the idea of doppelgangers as well. So I loved that little reference too. It made me very happy and made me want to watch Vertigo, which I think is, of course, a better movie. But I actually think most of the movies this film references are better movies than The Substance, but that's okay.
Yeah, this movie does have a lot of references, but I think it does it tastefully enough that nothing is ever in your face with the references, I would say. Not necessarily effects or moments, but yeah, I'm happy that so many people are interacting with this movie and seeing it. What do you think in terms of this movie's awards potential, or possibly showing up at the Oscars or at different ceremonies this season?
We've talked many times on this show about the Academy having a horror movie bias. The Academy does like over the top, though. They like obvious and over the top. So when I think of it that way, I think, oh, you know, maybe. But it's very critical of LA and of the industry, too. So I think that might be tough for them. But there are a few things in the movie that would deserve recognition. I think specifically makeup and hairstyling, which we'll talk about in a second. I think that definitely deserves attention. I think Margaret Qualley is great in the movie, too. But I think that Demi Moore has a real shot with some critics' prizes. I could see the LA Film Critics Association giving her Best Actress, the New York Film Critics Circle. I don't think so. I think that they will probably go with someone else, but I could see her winning a prize like that, or, you know, getting nominated at the Gotham Awards or with Indie Spirit. I think that there are places where that performance can and should be recognized, but I don't think that it will extend to the Oscars, especially because it is so crowded this year in Best Actress. Screenplay is also interesting just because it did win that award at Cannes, but I wouldn't think of this movie as a screenplay winner. Like, that win looks almost more odd in retrospect, having seen the movie now. What do you think?
I think for past Cannes screenplay winners, absolutely. I think as the searing indictment of Hollywood, it would be interesting if it did show up or was in the conversation for the Oscars. I think that that probably has a better chance than Demi Moore. Sadly, I think she's great. I think maybe it's almost too small of like a role, not in what she does or what she has to go through, but I think in terms of the other actresses and performances that we have coming that are just heavier or bigger, seemingly. So that might be tough for her, but I think a Golden Globe nomination could be possible and I think would be great for her. Yeah, otherwise I don't see a ton. I would like to hear your talk about makeup and hairstyling because I think that would be great. We've talked about a lot of those elements here, and this movie, again, really works for me because it's all practical and it's not CG. Mm-hmm. If it were the other way around, I would probably be half as high on it as I am.
Yeah, I think so. That's why, like, my answer to our question every episode of if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be? My answer is makeup and hairstyling, because I love like gross out makeup in body horror. And I think we have some really good work here. I think just not only how her back splits open and then gets stitched up, that's so disgusting. And I think great prosthetic work there, but also, you know, as her character, as Elizabeth ages, as Sue is taking advantage of her time with the substance, I think there's some really good aging makeup work there. It leans into the horrific. And I think it's really good because you can still see Demi Moore. You can still see Elizabeth, but they've transformed her into this witch, like in a fairy tale. Like, it becomes a sort of hagsploitation type of film. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, the Eliza Sue creation, it reminded me a lot of Angelica Houston's makeup in The Witches when she peels her face off and becomes the Grand High Witch. That's what it reminded me a lot of, just the cavernous like divots in her skin. And with this character, you have ears in random places and you mm-hmm. have Elizabeth's face just like flat on this character's back. It's very gross and very well done.
I want to split it and give Demi Moore actress for this, but I think I have to go with makeup and hairstyling too. It's those elements that take it there that needed to. And I think it, in a way, when you're seeing it happening and unfolding on screen, part of the time I couldn't watch, I had my hands over my eyes. I'm like, no, I can't do it. The needles, the transformations. Mm-hmm. But then the other half of the time, you're like, you can't not watch.
Yeah.
And it's seeing these ideas come to life that is just so mesmerizing. And whether it's over the top or not, it's seeing that play out that I think is so fascinating. I loved all of the little bits. Yeah, the ears, the eyes, the teeth, the boobs on Monstro, or like I mentioned, the pussy injection site from her back when she's in that dark room and she just puts her away for the week. Oh, it's awful. Or just her, yeah, smearing it all over her face and just seeing her break down and what that looks and feels like too. So there's a big range of that happening here.
For sure. Well, that was our episode on The Substance. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll be doing a New York Film Festival dispatch, talking about some of the movies that we've seen at the festival, as well as a big new release, Megalopolis. We will see what we think of that one. I am excited to see it, though, and experience what it's all about.
Yeah, we will see another Cannes movie, actually. And with all of the New York movies, we'll, as we see them, talk about Oscar potential, as I'm sure many of you are curious of, and just what we think of the movies. We're going to see a lot over the next few weeks, and I'm excited to chat about them.
Well, thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. And for bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.